And welcome back to Dad's on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and with me in the studio today is Ken Thompson.
Hi, Bill, and hi to everyone listening.
And our topic today is a very serious topic, but it's an important topic. We're going to be speaking about suicide and in particular the influence of unemployment. And we're speaking to Anthony Smith, men's health educator and the owner of Career Pathway Solutions. He also does consulting and has undertaken social marketing and strategic planning, focusing on population and community health and well-being. Anthony, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bill and Ken, thank you. And thanks for the listeners, to the listeners.
Anthony, perhaps before we start on this topic of suicide, men and unemployment, we might just go into what the facts are on suicide, and they're pretty frightening, aren't they?
Yeah, so if we look at Australia's statistics, there's about 2,500 people kill themselves in Australia every year, and most of those are men, three quarters, and those figures are generally accepted as being considerably underreported. I know them. Some people think that the figure's probably about 3,000 a year. Mm. Now, within that, what is also horrific is that large numbers of unemployed men. Now, the largest figures are across the 30s, 40s and 50s, and unemployed men make up about 30 to 40% of those, and there's very strong research in Queensland over two decades that looks at that and breaks that down. But what's happened over the last couple of decades with unemployment is that a lot of men in their 30s, 40s and 50s, once they become longer-term unemployed, get moved across onto disability. And the Queensland research shows that there's probably those figures again. If you add from the Queensland research, that's the Australian Institute of Suicide Research and Prevention, published in 2013, that together, unemployed and this ambiguous thing called not in the labour force, which includes disability and things like that, together they add to about 60% of all suicides, or all male suicides, which is most suicides. So it is horrific. It's more than homicides and road fatalities put together.
People are not aware of that in the community, I'm sure, and I think the most recent figures in 2012, over 1,900 males have committed suicide. But you mentioned that they're conservative, they're underreported. Now, from what I understand, the way that the statistics are collected, they might just as well describe, say, a sole accident with a motor vehicle drives into a tree. That may not be regarded as suicide, and yet it very likely is. There are lots of examples of that.
That's a common one that's referred to. There are other examples that may be suicides but are not counted as suicides, such as overdoses, where, you know, there may have been the intention. So coronial process, the coroner will consider the sudden deaths once it's been determined that it's not a murder. And so there are quite a few of those ones that, because there's not a clear indication, such as letters being left or something like that, quite a few of those are not counted as suicides, though they probably are.
And I can understand there'd be pressure from the families that it not be recorded as a suicide, so there'd be all that influence as well.
Yes. So there are very few actual inquests held to determine that. So for lots of reasons, including simply that they're timely and costly.
So while we're on the numbers, I think the worst year was 1963.
The last couple of decades have been consistent, high numbers. What we know over, in general terms, over a long period of time, like a century or more, is that there are fluctuations that go with economic crises. They also go with wars, curiously enough, but certainly economic crises. And that's why there's been such very interesting international research research just the last couple of years following the global financial crisis, where they have looked at the correlation between suicides and economic condition in different countries, compared different countries across Europe and OECD countries, and it clearly there's that strong relationship. And so what a lot of the researchers are calling for now is to push past this focus purely on the mental health of individuals and to look at things like labour market programs, calling specifically for active labour market programs as a legitimate suicide prevention activity.
Yes, you mentioned that middle-aged men are particularly vulnerable to suicide. Is that linked to employment as well, do you think, or unemployment?
Oh, I think there's no doubt about it. So once men, you know, mature-aged men from their, say, mid-30s on become unemployed, there are a lot of things that compound their difficulties. And we know that they, many of these men become isolated in a different way that's to do with how men are. So that one of the things that I say is that even within families, men can be isolated.
Oh, definitely, yes. So why do you think this suicide rate, this national tragedy, why do you think it doesn't get the attention?
Oh, I think there's a number of things. It wouldn't be right to say one thing or another. I think that from the 90s on, the increase in interest and work towards suicide prevention was sparked by a concern about what was called youth suicides. And that was vague because they were measuring youth as between 15 and 24. But what we find out is that actually most youth suicides are young men, 20 to 24. There are relatively very few teenage suicides. Now, of course, they're tragic. It's a horrible thing. But so are all the men who are killing themselves who don't get this focus. So I think there's a number of things. We're trying to address that now. And I think that there's growing support for this idea that we need to step beyond the focus just on the mental health disorder or what have you. A lot of people are in a lot of distress, and it's not to do with them having a precondition for a mental health disorder.
Yes, the link with depression is one of the pervading myths in this whole area. I think that everyone, just a lot of people anyway, just assume that if you commit suicide, you must have suffered from clinical depression, and I don't think the evidence bears that out.
Yes, there's been, again, some very, very good work done in this area, because a lot of this presumption that there's a connection between, you know, a psychiatric or a depressive disorder or what have you and suicide has been based on what they call the psychological autopsy. And this was in Australia. This was actually done by, although it sounds like a very technical term, it was actually done by a police officer who attends the sudden death. And they were filling out this information about the leading question amongst just a few questions was, you know, whether or not the person was depressed. Mm. Now, they probably got a tick because if you were asked, they'd say, well, they probably were depressed.
Yeah.
But that tick became a psychiatric disorder. And so if you go and Google the relationship, you'll see pages and pages and pages of, you know, 90% of all suicides are depressed and 90%, 95% of all suicides have got a psychiatric disorder. It's all based on this psychological autopsy, and that has been very well counted in a very good paper by Professor Heidi Hjelmeland, who was actually a keynote speaker at the Suicide Prevention Conference in Australia just a couple of weeks ago in Hobart. So you've got the evidence now to start pushing that side, that information aside, and looking at the broader range of factors that might bring people, men and women, young and old, to such a desperate situation that they might consider killing themselves.
Yes, we're going to take a short break now and we'll come back with exploring some of the other myths that are involved in this whole area. So we're going to listen to the Beatles singing Your Blues.
know the reason why.
And that was Your Blues by the Beatles. And we're speaking with Anthony Smith, who is a men's health educator and the owner of Career Pathway Solutions, on the topic of suicide, men, and in particular, the influence of unemployment. So, Anthony, you've mentioned depression is invariably linked with suicide. There are some other myths that we hear about that people do it for to get attention, and I think that's also not necessarily involved in suicide attempts.
If I may just clarify the thing about depression, I'm not saying that it's not linked. It is linked, but what the preceding factors in what brings somebody to be depressed is very ambiguous and not explored properly.
Perhaps just coming back again to some of these myths that are in this area, one of them is that people just do it to get attention.
No, well, and I would never discount that as an important thing. Maybe some people do want attention, and that's the way they go about getting attention. Clearly, they need help.
Mm.
So we shouldn't be judgmental as to whether somebody does something like that to seek attention or not. They clearly need help.
Yes.
But yes, it's true that what we do know about the difference between completed suicides and attempts and other range of non-fatal self-harm, if you like, is that on the one hand, completed suicides are mostly men, and most of them complete their suicide at their first attempt.
Mm.
And most of those have had very little contact with mental health services. So there's no real evidence that they had some sort of psychiatric disorder. And what we believe is that, because quite simply, the large numbers of unemployed are, they're in trouble, but they don't necessarily have a psychiatric or other disorder.
Anthony, what you seem to be saying is that it's more a situational type event. It's not like a result of perhaps long-term depression. It's a life event or a series of life events that's causing people to take this drastic action. Is that a good interpretation of it?
I think that's a better way to describe it, yes. We've got a term now that's become common, you know, in research and programs and health and health promotion, social determinants. And life events is a good example of a social determinant. The fact that somebody becomes retrenched has a big impact on their life, and what we can see is a whole lot of other things that follow on from this, such as relationship breakdown and homelessness and financial burden, etc., that all can impact.
It's not always necessarily just that one event. It's a whole range of events that just put an enormous amount of sort of downwards pressure on that person to the point where they feel they just can't cope anymore.
Yes, I think that's a better way of thinking about it. It's not just the fact that somebody's become unemployed, because clearly there's a lot of people who become unemployed who don't go ahead and kill themselves.
Mm.
But you know, depending on other sorts of circumstances, and we know that things like single men are much more likely to kill themselves than those within a, you know, still in a relationship, etc. So there's a whole lot of sets of things. And I'm not discounting that in some cases there may be some sort of psychological or psychiatric things that compound the difficulties that the person is facing in their life, including serious depression.
Mm. So, Anthony, when an outsider sees these factors mounting up, they're often afraid to talk to the person who might be suicidal, but should they in fact have a discussion with the person?
I think that the general literature around now is saying, yes, you're going to be better off. Dr. John Ashfield and I'm pleased to say that I'm proud to say that I have done some work with John in producing a number of documents on this issue, but he's just released a very good booklet about preventing male suicide, and that's one of the issues that we talk about in the booklet. Preventing male suicide become part of the solution. It's not going to, you know, compound the difficulty to actually broach this with somebody who you think might be in serious trouble. But even there, what my concern is, we really don't have very much service support for the men who are in trouble. So one of the real challenges that I see is that, on the one hand, we've got this simplistic idea coming out from health and mental health and some of these not-for-profits about, well, men should improve their help-seeking behaviour. But my response to that is, well, where is the decent help for men that are in trouble? And I think, in fact, that what happens is that even if men look for help, they find that there's nothing really suitable for them, and this further isolates them.
So it's really more of a societal problem than looking at it just on an individual basis.
Oh, absolutely. You see, that's one of the problems with men who go ahead and kill themselves at their first attempt. Statistically, they're unlikely to have had contact with mental health services. If they've had any contact with health services, it's just been for a physical thing. And we presume that, you know, doctors should somehow be able to see that, well, maybe they're depressed or what have you. I think we load too much on the GPs. Even there, where can the GP, even if they suspect that somebody is seriously depressed or in trouble in other sorts of ways, where can they refer that man on to?
And that's particularly a factor in rural situations, I imagine.
Oh, well, yes, it is. But don't discount how serious that issue is in the cities as well. Because, like I say, you know, men can be very, very isolated, even within families or even within a community. So, yes, it is serious in rural, but it, I think, is also very serious in our cities and towns as well.
So what are some practical steps that people could take if they suspect that one of their friends or relations is suicidal?
Well, some contact with the person, but try and find some sort of avenue, some sort of service that might be helpful. There may be some phone numbers for male friendly services. But I'd be saying to people but don't leave it at that. If you're concerned about it, and you're concerned about some other person, then, as we say in this book, that, you know, start ringing your local, your state, your federal MPs and complain about this. Because once people start looking at how they can help people, they're going to find how very thin this whole issue is. Oh, I've spent time going around to a lot of the services, the not-for-profits and charities and other sorts of services in the eastern suburbs of Melbourne, and very few of them have a part of their charter to work with men. There's lots of services for, you know, families and mothers and children, and so there should be, but very few for men. So I ask them what happens if they become aware of a man who may be in trouble, and they say, oh, well, we refer them on to the GP. So there's just a treadmill of this same, they're not getting anywhere. And, you know, my colleague John Franklin and I, who've been working on the 45-plus program, we've been working with groups of these men, and the same stories come back. They've got nowhere to turn for help. So what I've been saying for some time now is that what we should be doing is, and I'm repeating myself, but there's a context for this now. We should be stepping right aside from the focus purely on mental health and looking at things like improving our attempts at job creation and improving the re-employment support for mature age men within a context of other sorts of support as well, so that other agencies, when they become aware that a man's unemployed, so if they've got a family, and we know this is happening, that services for families are finding themselves with a lot more work, families, cases, and behind these cases there's an unemployed man. So if they had a policy on what they could do to help that man or where they could refer that man on, that they could feel confident that it was going to be suitable to the needs of that man rather than push him along the avenue of, you know, well, maybe you're depressed, which is not going to be helpful.
There's some good advice from our guest today, Anthony Smith. Anthony, we always ask our guests at this stage if they'd like to pick a song for us to go out on. Would you like to tell us which one you picked and why you picked it?
The Saints, who were a great Australian band, and Way Ago on Prehistoric Sounds, which I think was one of the great Australian albums, they did a cover version of Otis Redding's song called Security. Though the original version was great, I thought the Saints did a fantastic job. And Security, obviously, has a clear role in this whole thing about, you know, unemployment, retrenchment, workplace, mental health issues, etc.
So here is Security.
I don't want no money, no, 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 no. I don't want no fame, but
And that was Security by The Saints. And if this program has raised any issues for you, you can go for assistance to one of these people. Lifeline on 131114, Men's Line 1300 789 978, Beyond Blue 1300 224 636, or Kids Helpline on 1-800-551-800. We'd like to thank our special guest today, Anthony Smith. Don't forget, he's got a booklet out called Preventing Male Suicide, Become Part of the Solution, which was written also with Dr. John Ashfield and Luke Bain. So, Anthony, thank you very much for being on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
And we'll be back next week with another program on Dads on the Air. So in the meantime, if you'd like to listen to this program again or any of our previous shows, go to dadsontheair.com.au. And so until next week, it's bye from Dads on the Air.